All right. Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between, this is Tony's Political Ramblings. So today I wanted to focus today on U.S. foreign policy, specifically in the Indo-Pacific region. As many of you are well aware, the dynamics of power out in the Indo-Pacific have shifted quite a bit, actually, in the last 30 to 40 years, as I've mentioned in past episodes, with the growing power of the People's Republic of China. So if we look at this from the perspective of the U.S. and its own foreign interests, I have a pitch. And this is much akin to the episode that I did pitching a plan to rebuild the South in the United States. So this is one of those episodes. I did the one with healthcare as well. If you'd like to hear my pitch, like to hear my ideas, please lend me your ear. So my pitch is for the United States to build its foreign policy and diplomatic relationships in the Indo-Pacific region around India. And so why is that? Why do I posit that? So first I'm going to describe the problem, the problems as they exist out there. As I've mentioned, the People's Republic of China has had a huge growing influence out in the region over the last 40 years, even to the point where the People's Republic of China is officially trying to change maps to extend the border of the People's Republic of China into the ocean. Now, that's something I've never heard anyone do before. So, you know, it's very much illegal and not something that complies with international standards. So this is something that has grown, and you have territorial claims to bodies of water. You have border scuffles with other nations and all, and so this is a situation as far as the U.S. is concerned that probably needs to be addressed in a significant way, and so we have our traditional allies out in the Pacific, Indo-Pacific region. You have Japan, which sits at roughly 125 million people. You have South Korea at 51 million people. And these are strong allies from the post-World War II era that have really stuck by our side, by and large. There are obviously people in those countries who are not huge fans of the United States, but overall, the perception is pretty good. You have the ASEAN nations. That's ASEAN. That is the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. They had a trade deal with us that was put in place under the Obama administration, but was subsequently pulled out during the Trump administration. So that was taken down. And as far as I'm aware, that's not been put back in place. But as it stands, the United States has allies in the area. Oh, and Australia as well. But that's a little bit further down, further south. And it's hard for an immediate sort of response, immediate pressures to be felt up in the mainland if they're all the way down in Australia. And so that's the scenario we find ourselves in right now. However, there is one ally that I could think of that A, shares a border with the People's Republic of China, B, is a Eurocentric style democracy, C, it is friendly to the United States, and that is India. And so what would my pitch be? That's the next question. So my pitch would be to invest in India much in the same way that we invested in rebuilding much of Europe following World War II via the Marshall Plan, Japan also following World War II, and South Korea as well in the second half of the 20th century. And so this would be implementing a sort of semi-Marshall Plan to India. And it's not like India is a nation that is, it just come off of a war or they're in particularly dire straits. But investing in India through like I said, foreign aid, through foreign aid loans and that sort of thing, an investment capital in basically from the U.S. government to Indian to the Indian government would allow for the Indian society to take off and grow in ways that it has not before. And why do I say this? Well, I just use my past examples. And even you could argue that the People's Republic of China was able to benefit from the United States' investment. And now, granted, that was more, that was a lot of, from private firms and manufacturing, et cetera, et cetera. But I believe that an investment in India, again, you could go the manufacturing route, but you could also go in a way to help them establish their own companies, their own products to sell domestically, because there's certainly enough of a market in the country of India to make that work. And so that's the plan. Basically, it would be large-scale investments in India. And the effects that I would expect to come from this, I would say large-scale investments for the public and private sectors of India. And that would be all over the country, so that the country would develop to a place that it could match the People's Republic of China in terms of infrastructure, technology, quality of life. The people who live in India would have a higher quality of life as well. And again, and advancing that nation to a point to developmentally where it could rival the People's Republic of China. And so what would the benefits of this be? Well, I mean, you have a number of ones that I could think of off the top of my head, so I'll go into them. First off, it would be a benefit for democracy. India is a nation that is a European-style democracy, where, you know, you have, again, people like Prime Minister Modi are democratically elected from individuals from all over the country. So investing in that sort of country is crucial, especially as we're seeing challenges to election, quote-unquote, election integrity in many nations all over the country, as well as the People's Republic of China's refusal to even have elections beyond the local level. There are elections in China, by the way. They just happen at such a local, small level of government that it isn't really meaningful in any capacity. Everything else is run by the Chinese Communist Party. That's just a point of clarification. But obviously, in India, you have elections going all the way up to prime minister. So it's a big deal over there. And investing in democracy in this sort of time period is a very important piece of that. And two, it would be as a way to create another strong ally out in the Indo-Pacific region. And generally, my philosophy towards international relations and diplomacy is that, well, diplomacy is the best way to go. And the more allies that the United States can have and act in accordance with, the better off we all are. I believe that most interactions, you know, in terms of any major, well, COVID-19, I should say, has shown the importance of a cohesive, well-functioning international network, because a lack of communication between nations that are undoubtedly connected leads to disasters like COVID-19's wreak of havoc that is being unleashed on the world. So it's a win for democracy, and it's a win for diplomatic ties out in the Indo-Pacific region. And three, it's another way to fence in the People's Republic of China. As I've mentioned, we do have a good number of allies out in the Indo-Pacific region. As I said, Japan, South Korea, but they're much smaller countries. Japan, again, 125 million people, South Korea, 51. India has 1.37 billion people. That can match the People's Republic of China. That is it is a big country with a lot of military capacity as well, if that were able to be developed to a point where the People's Republic of China is today. And so you have this massive potential for another massive ally out in the Indo-Pacific region. And so it's a way of fencing China in, because now you have India to the west, Taiwan to the south, and let's not forget about Taiwan. They're another piece of this picture as well. Australia to the distant south. And you have South Korea and Japan to the east. And this would be a great way, again, if we're talking from the perspective of U.S. foreign interests, a great way of sort of fencing in the People's Republic of China and sort of stymieing their influence. Now, of course, you do have Russia to the north, so this does not really do much to help that. But it does put a large group of people firmly on the side of the United States, as they already are, but this would give them a stronger reason to be there. And so when you look at it in that context, in the context of a win for democracy, a win for diplomacy, and a win for, again, from the perspective of the United States, sort of boxing in the People's Republic of China, you know, investing in India and investing in that country in both the private and public sectors would be wins all around. And particularly if we could get to a point where, India has good universities, or, you know, better universities than they're at now, it'd be a way to develop new technologies for the whole world to use. Because, you know, this is an aside, but when we have countries and continents all over the planet that are that resources are constantly diverted away from, we're wasting our own potential. And the same is true with marginalizing any sort of group intentionally. You know, for every person we marginalize and throw to the sidelines, we lose the potential to make ourselves as a human race better. And so it is my opinion that investing in a nation like India that has so much potential, it's not only a good move politically, but it is a good move for the development and advancement of the human species.